Dates and on the 13th of June, 1979. A world that is hot and burning cannot be without the teaching. For the teaching is similar to water that puts out fire. Without the sasana, it is similar to a village or a land that is being consumed by fire without having any water to put it out. There can only be destruction. Nothing good can be found. In a place where there is enough water to put the fire out, that place will be safe and secure. In a place where there is not enough water to put out the fire, then such a place will be left in a total state of destruction and devastation. It is similar with the heart of the world, which needs the teaching, the water of Dhamma, to quench the fires of Raka, Dosa, and Moha, lust, hate, and delusion. If we cannot use the Dhamma to totally extinguish this fire, at least we should be able to diminish it and lessen it. It is like an illness which has the proper medicines to cure it. In sickness and illness, some may die and some may live, and some may be cured. This depends on the ability of the doctor and whether he can cure the disease or not. If he cannot, then that person will die. And if he can, then that person will survive. It is the same way with the heart of any individual. If the water of Dhamma can get into his heart, then he can use this Dhamma to extinguish the fire that is within his heart. If one's heart is really cruel and malicious, and one pays no attention to good and bad, right and wrong, heaven and hell, but only the things that one desires, then one's heart will be in a state of burning. No matter how much one can acquire according to one's desires, if one's heart is in a constant state of burning, such that the water of Dhamma cannot enter into it, then one's citta will always be on fire, burning one all the time. There will be more greed if one allows oneself to pursue one's greed, one's raga tanha, one's lustful desire. There can be no curbing of this desire if one constantly allows oneself to pursue it, following one's delusion, not giving any attention to right and wrong, but allowing oneself to be dragged away by the influence of the kilesas, tanha, and asava. One's citta will then be burning with fire. Wherever one lives in the world, even if it was a palace, or whatever we think is the most comfortable place to live in, and the place where people with honor and dignity live, all there would just be the names of honor and dignity. But fire will constantly be consuming the citta of that individual to the extent where he would not be able to let go of it, because there is no water to put it out. This water is Dhamma. So for this reason, Dhamma is extremely necessary for all sentient beings. Similar to water that is necessary to put out fire. As soon as the sasana disappears from any particular world, then that world must become burning hot. The sentient beings who live in such a world will be constantly consumed by fire, and there will not be any happiness. That is why all the sages, like the Lord Buddha, taught the Dhamma, so that this Dhamma could get into the hearts of people. The importance of Dhamma is foremost, and nothing can surpass it. But one's body and speech are the servants, the instruments, while one's citta is the master. They obey the commands of the heart. Therefore, the heart is vital, as shown in the Dhammapada, which says, Mano bubbangama dhamma, mano seita, mano maya. This can be differentiated into two. All dhammas have the heart as the chief. The heart is the vessel that is the most suitable for dhamma. When the heart has dhamma, then whatever one does, whether through body or speech, it will always be auspicious. But if one's heart is rotten, then whatever one does, one will always be consumed by dukkha. And the result of this dukkha is similar to the tracks of the wagon wheel that follow the tracks of the oxen that pulls the wagon. The result of dukkha will always follow those who commit bad or evil deeds. And the result of happiness will always follow those who do good. One who has virtue in his heart is one who always carries with him the medicines to cure his illnesses. Wherever he goes, there is always some form of cure for him that will alleviate his affliction. Therefore, Dhamma is not something insignificant, something that one can disregard. One should not think that the sasana is something merely inscribed in palm leaves, or found just in the monasteries, or that the sasana is only with the bhikkhus and samaneras, or that the sasana is only with the Lord Buddha and the Arahant Savakas, or that the sasana is only with the Buddha, Dhamma, and Sangha. All of this is just a misinterpretation or misunderstanding. For Dhamma, in truth, is a common property for anyone to use if they wish to take and use as they please. One can take it to use to quench the fire inside one's heart. Dhamma is the natural and common property of the world. One who seeks for virtue, righteousness, gracefulness, and cool-heartedness will not be off the mark if he takes the Dhamma as his compass and guide. Nothing can surpass the Dhamma in wisdom. Where does Panya come from, if not from the Magga, the Noble Eightfold Path? Sati is mindfulness, a constant awareness of the actions of one's body, speech, and heart. This is the path, the Magga. This is Samma Sati, right mindfulness. One's actions of body and speech that are right and proper are called Samma Vaja and Samma Gamanta, right speech and right action. They are the factors of the path, and this is the Dhamma of the Lord Buddha. This Dhamma is perfect and flawless. One isn't simply good or bad, because one takes up human birth. And whatever class of people one belongs to cannot be considered either good or bad. Truly, it depends on one's behavior of body, speech, and heart, and whether these are going the right or wrong way, the good way or the bad. One can only be judged by one's actions. Simply taking a human birth does not mean that one is good. The only thing good about it is that one has received the result of one's past actions, and it is a good result. But as far as the good of the future and present is concerned, this depends on one's behavior and conduct, and the training of oneself following the right and proper way of Dhamma. This Dhamma of the Lord Buddha can make people grow in the good way, gradually upwards until they reach the highest virtue. The Dhamma cannot be blamed for not being able to make people good, for it is the person himself who might not be able to practice so that he can develop himself in the good way. That is, he is not able to take up Dhamma and train himself with it, befitting its wonderful and marvelous nature. He will then not be good and virtuous, like the Dhamma of the Lord Buddha, the Sammana Gotama, the Buddha of the present era. And how many sentient beings did he lead out of the flow of samsara to make them supreme beings, like the Arahants, the Anagamis, the Sakadagamis, the Sodapanas, and the Kalyanajanas, which means the virtuous people. They all cleansed or purified themselves with the Dhamma of the Lord Buddha to the utmost of their ability, and this is the way that people can be good in the way of Dhamma. Without the Dhamma discipline, one cannot be good alone by oneself. Concerning those who have gone forth, these are the practitioners who have taken up the yellow robe and been ordained in the sasana following the tradition of the Lord Buddha and the Arahant Savakas. This yellow robe is dyed with the dye taken from the hardwood of the jackfruit tree, similar to how it was in the past. This color is not desired by the world, but it is appropriate and suitable for the life of a bhikkhu. We have to realize that we have now taken up the yellow robe and been ordained in the sasana, but the kilesas themselves have not taken up the yellow robe with us. The kilesas are found right within our hearts, and how can we make ourselves good if we do not get rid of the kilesas? For the kilesas are the evil ones, and they are the enemies of the Dhamma inside the heart. Every kind of kilesa is antagonistic to Dhamma. Therefore, in order to remove every kind of kilesa, from the most coarse to the most subtle, we have to wage a great battle against them constantly. Sometimes we have to put our lives at stake. If the kilesas do not die, then we will. If we do not die, then the kilesas must die. At least, we should be able to subdue the kilesas, conquer them in the end, and totally annihilate them. This is for the purpose of making ourselves good, so that we can be good people. From the first day of our going forth, it is only us that have gone forth. The kilesas were not ordained with us. To go forth or to be ordained means to abstain from the things that we should abstain from, and to develop those things that we should develop. We are the ones who have gone forth, and we must take up the Dhamma and the Vinaya, the discipline, as our guide and basis of practice. This is especially so with the Vinaya, for it is the tool to curb and suppress the coarser kinds of kilesas, which manifest themselves clearly for the world to see. The Vinaya will keep the kilesas within disciplinary bounds. It will restrain and suppress the kilesas that manifest themselves through the actions of body and speech, and they involve the heart. On the other hand, the Dhamma is used to correct the kilesas inside the heart. In combating the kilesas, it is similar to the way the world wages a battle. For instance, in a boxing ring, the boxers put their lives at stake when they go into the ring. They put their whole effort into the fight. And while they are fighting, they are not concerned with victory or loss, but only with exerting to their utmost. If they have to lose their life, they are willing to give it up at that time. This is an example for the practitioners to compare themselves with. We must always consider every kind of kilesa as our enemy. Dhamma is the tool or instrument, but Dhamma is also our support and encouragement. But there are many aspects of Dhamma. It is the tool as well as the encouragement. Satipanya is the tool to combat the kilesas. It will search and destroy wherever the kilesas may be hidden. Satipanya will search them out. Satta, which is faith or conviction, serves as an encouragement or support. This is the belief that the kilesas can be conquered, and that we can defeat them. Viriya is another form of support, where we strive with diligent effort. This is the way of developing ourselves to be good and virtuous people. This is the way of making the bhikkhus and samaneras good bhikkhus and good samaneras, both in the way of the Vinaya, the discipline, and the way of Dhamma. In the way of the Vinaya, or discipline, they are graceful to behold in their way of doing things and the way they talk. In the way of Dhamma, they are cool-hearted, peaceful and calm, graceful and upright within their hearts. Having sati and panya, mindfulness and wisdom, to take care of their hearts. Every form of kilesas is harmful to us, so every form of kilesas must be eliminated. They must be removed or suppressed during every moment of our exertion. This is at the time when we are struggling with them. The results of our struggling with the kilesas, in the manner of a follower of the Lord Buddha, will be firstly on the level of virtuous people, the Kalyana Jana. Then we will move up to the level of the Arya, the noble ones, beginning with the Sotapanna, then gradually on up to the Sakadagami, and then to the Anagami. This will be the consequences of our suppression and removal of the kilesas, stage by stage, following our ability, until finally we arrive at the fruit of arahantship. These four levels of Arya Dhamma, five including the virtuous people level, are not beyond our ability and exertion. Having the instrument of Vinaya and Dhamma for the suppression and eradication of all the kilesas found within the citta. The time and place is not as important as the place where the Arya Sajja, the Four Noble Truths, are found. These four truths are Dukkha, Samudaya, Nirodha, and Magga. And where is Dukkha found? Dukkha is found right within the body and heart. And where is Samudaya? Samudaya is found inside the heart. The cause of bodily illness is not considered samudaya, because it is not the affair or the business of the kilesas. There are things that will cause the body to become sick and ill, but these are not as important as the kilesas within the heart. This is samudaya, which is the great antagonizer to the heart. That is why the Lord Buddha expounded the nature of samudaya, so we can see it clearly for what it is. It is kama tanha, bhava tanha, and vipava tanha. The Lord said this in the Dhammacakkappavattana Sutta. Kama tanha is sensual desire, the delighting in this and that thing. Kama is lustful desire, or whatever we like, for that is where the kilesas are. As far as bhava tanha and vipava tanha are concerned, we already know what they are, so I shall not discuss them in detail. I will instead discuss with you the foundation or the basis for the arising of the Four Noble Truths. Where are these Four Noble Truths? Where can they be found? This is much more important than anything else. Dukkha is in the heart, and this is the most significant. This dukkha is caused by samudaya. Samudaya is its source. Nirodha, the cessation of dukkha. Where will this happen? Wherever dukkha arises, that is where nirodha, the cessation of dukkha, will come to be. And what is it that will bring about nirodha? What is it that will bring about the cessation of dukkha? It is magga, the path. This is the Majjhima Patipada, the middle way of practice. There are 8 factors in this path, beginning with sammāditti and sammāsaṅkappo, right view and right thought. These 2 form the factors of paññā. Paññā is wisdom. In doing any kind of work, we usually choose a person who is wise as our leader. If we have an ignorant person as leader, then he will usually lead our work to ruin. Nobody will trust such a person. Both sammāditti and sammāsaṅkappo, right view and right thought, illustrate the circumspective wisdom of the magga, the path. And where can this magga be found? This magga is one form of cetasika dhamma, mental concomitant, and similarly with samudaya, the cause of dukkha. This samudaya arises from sanya, sankhara, and vijnana. Where else can samudaya come from? When they condition the kilesas to arise, this is called samudaya. And when they cause the suppression and removal of the dukkha and kilesas, this is called the magga. Thinking in the way of truth and wisdom, this is called paññā. Constant awareness is called sati, mindfulness. Sati is magga, and it arises from the same heart. It is the same way with the kilesas, which also arise from the same heart. But the kilesas suppress and oppress the heart and wear it down. They control and subjugate the heart and cause it to experience a lot of affliction and hardship. They constantly pressurize the heart. Magga is the cleansing agent that is used to clean all of these things so that the heart can ascend and elevate itself to the highest due to the work of magga, thus arriving at the state of freedom. Nirodha, the cessation of dukkha, will steadily come about following the strength of magga. When the time comes for one to arrive at the final and total cessation of dukkha, due to the strength and ability of the Magga, which will have been developed to its fullest. Then this will happen in a single instant. This is when the Arahata Magga, or the Arahant path, extinguishes or puts out all the kilesas, tanha and asava, that converge and hide behind the kilesa of avicca, within a single instant. Nirodha, the cessation of dukkha, is merely a function. When the Magga has totally extinguished the kilesas, then the function of Nirodha has come to an end. When Nirodha, which is the outcome of Magga, becomes apparent, then the function of extinguishing dukkha also comes to an end, right within that instant. That is why the Lord Buddha said that dukkha should be known, so that we can see this dukkha very clearly. Although we already know it within ourselves, since we are not dead people, how can we not know it? For the reason that the Lord Buddha told us that we should get to know dukkha is that although dukkha is with every one of us, we never look at it so that we can know how to overcome it and investigate into its nature so as to find a way of getting rid of it. For this reason, the Lord Buddha taught a systematic way of discerning dukkha so that a practitioner of the way could follow it. The Lord said that we should get to know dukkha and relinquish samudaya, its cause. And how are we going to let go of samudaya? Here the Lord said it very briefly, but the meaning itself is extensive. In order to let go of samudaya, we have to use diligent effort, having satipanya as the important tool. No matter how hard this may be, we have to commit ourselves to the struggle. This is the way of letting go of samudaya. This is the way of getting rid of all the samudaya, which are the kilesas, from the heart, by depending on the power of Magga. This Magga is the Majjhima Patipada, the middle way of practice. Nirodha, the cessation of dukkha, will appear by itself. That is, dukkha will disappear by itself. It will come to an end. These dhammas do not function at different times. The way these four dhammas are being discussed, it seems that they are in different places and in different directions. But truly, they are all found within the same place. The dukkha that arises within the heart. The awareness that dukkha has arisen also arises at the same instant that the dukkha does. The investigation to find out the cause of dukkha, to find out the causes that afflict the citta and disturb it, also arises at the same time. Speaking of the disturbances of the heart, these are the aramana, or mental thought objects, that the citta becomes attached to. For instance, when someone speaks badly of us, and this could happen many months before, when the citta does not think about it, then nothing happens. But when the citta begins to take hold of these ideas, and the fact that someone has talked badly about us, then it becomes aroused with anger. This anger is called samudaya. When there is dissatisfaction and anger, how can there not be dukkha? It is this anger that causes dukkha, and it is this ill will that causes dukkha, because one takes the criticisms of other people to heart, and one becomes very dissatisfied with these people. This is samudaya, and that is why dukkha must arise. How can one extinguish this dukkha? The way of questioning this is magga. This is the time that Satipanya begins to investigate to see that sankhara is just a deception. Before, when nobody tells us of other people's criticisms of us, we are not aroused by anger or dissatisfaction. But when somebody tells us of this criticism that may have been made some time ago, we become aroused with anger and dissatisfaction. And then we become afflicted with dukkha. This is one form of samudaya. We are speaking of just one form of samudaya, that is, on the side of anger. But there is also another side of samudaya, and this is the side of affection. This is another form of samudaya, like kama tanha, for instance. This is what affection and delighting in things means. They are kilesas, and similarly with dissatisfaction, ill will, and anger. Now we are investigating sankhara, which conceives all our deception. Before sankhara arises, nothing happens. Sankhara is just a deception, and so is sanya, with which we assume and presume. It is also a deception. Satipanya, which is mindfulness and wisdom, must round them up and bring them inside by subduing and curbing them, and finally eliminating them. Satipanya must coerce sankhara and sanya away from thinking about these things, and then calm down. This is the way of curbing and eliminating the kilesas. Once these kilesas have been curbed and eliminated, that is, these thoughts about criticism of us have been restrained, then the dukkha will disappear. This is because both sanya and sankhara pick up these ideas and play with them. When Satipanya can catch up with this, then both sanya and sankhara will stop thinking continually about these things. Dukkha will then not arise. When sanya and sankhara, which are the kilesas, have been subdued by Satipanya, then dukkha will disappear, and nirodha will arise and become apparent. These are all at the same place. Don't waste your time thinking or imagining about the various things. Don't shoulder the load of the whole world and of the whole physical universe. It is heavy and doesn't do you any good, such as when you imagine that the magga, pala, and nibbana are in such and such a place. This is just a waste of time. On the other hand, you don't investigate and differentiate the kilesas in your heart so that you can identify and remove them. That is why the kilesas will always remain inside our hearts to consume and afflict us all the time, without ever coming to an end. All the dukkha arises in the heart. Samudaya is like an endless long line, and if we do not cut this line, which is like the source of dukkha, with our means of Satipanya, how then can we find any virtue within ourselves, or happiness from our going forth? I said earlier on that when we take up the rope, the kilesas do not take up the rope with us. We have to combat and struggle with the kilesas, but most of the time, we are on the losing side. those who are capable of conquering the kilesas and attaining to the highest fruit of arahantship are not very many. We have to face this point and consider it many, many times. There is a great difference between the time of the Lord Buddha and our time as far as going forth or ordination is concerned. Nowadays, people ordain more as a ritual, which is in great contrast to the days of the Lord Buddha, when people went forth for the sake of Dhamma. They went forth with a perception of the harm of the things that they had experienced in lay life. They had experienced so much of them that they reached the point where they became weary, sick, and tired of it. So when they took up the robe, they took it up with satta, faith and conviction, and the desire to be free from dukkha, and all the other oppressive influences that had been subjecting their hearts to dukkha. Therefore, there is a great contrast between Savaka Arahants during the time of the Lord Buddha, the way they exerted themselves, and the way that bhikkhus exert themselves nowadays. During that time, the teacher who taught Dhamma was the Lord Buddha himself. Listening to the Dhamma of the Lord Buddha is like receiving 100% pure gold. What the Lord taught was the real and genuine truth. The Dhamma that the Lord Buddha attained to was experienced by himself, and it was in accordance with Dhamma. He realized and experienced everything before teaching the Savakas. For the listeners, it was not necessary for them to select which was right and which was wrong, and what was correct and what was not correct. All they had to do was just to take it in and absorb it. Once they had listened to the Dhamma instruction, they then went on their way to exert with diligent effort and satta, the conviction, to their utmost ability. In every mode of their exertion, their hearts were filled with chanda, viriya, citta, and vimansa, satisfaction, diligent effort, concentration, and reflection. These four dhammas blended into one. If such is the way, how can the result not emerge? And so it happened that some of them attained to Dhamma on that mountain, or in that forest, or that walking path, or in that sitting position, or standing up, or lying down in that forest, or on that mountain. They attained to the result of Dhamma due to their earnestness, by truly committing themselves to Dhamma practice. Both the Dhamma and the one who presented the Dhamma, the Lord Buddha himself, were both real, and there were no uncertainties in them. And those who listened to Dhamma were those who had perceived the harm of living in the world of samsara, so their hearts were vessels that were ready for Dhamma. So when the Lord Buddha taught Dhamma to them, they were able to pick it up to their fullest capacity. They then took up this Dhamma and strived in their practice until they attained to the highest goal. They in turn became the refuge or sarana of Sangham Saranam Gacchami. This was the way that people took up the robe in the time of the Lord Buddha. Don't have the understanding that the Dhamma of this time or the Dhamma of that time are faked. And don't think that the kilesas of this time and that time are two different kinds of kilesa. Truly speaking, the kilesas of that time are also the kilesas of this time. They are one and the same thing, And it is the same with the Dhamma. The Dhamma of the past and the Dhamma of the present are the same Dhamma. The differences are only in the teaching techniques and the ability of the teacher. So the important factor is in our faith, in our sattā, in searching for a teacher who truly practices the way and has realized the result from his practice. He who teaches following the instruction of Dhamma and has attained to its highest fruit, like the Savakas of the past, that teacher is the most suitable teacher that we should take up and follow. He will be the one to give us the full benefit of the teaching. And the one who seeks for him will not have to select or discriminate the Dhamma that he teaches, because the Dhamma that he teaches will be the true and genuine Dhamma. Where else can the path and fruit go when we are ready for them? So as far as seeking for a teacher is concerned, we now have found the best teacher. Anyone who has attained to the highest state of purity, the state of Putto, is the foremost, the best. So when we practice to the utmost of our ability and our faith in Dhamma, then the result cannot be different from the results that the Savakas received in the past. They must be of the same characteristic. It seems as though people in the present day take up robes as a ritual. But those who took up robes in the past really had the purpose of getting rid of their sensual lust, their gama raka. Some of them had grown weary of this lust even before they took up the robe, why some of them grew weary of it afterwards. Some of them even took up the robe without intending to stay in it. But due to their underlying tendencies, their upanisaya, they were eventually able to accept Dhamma and subsequently to take up the teaching and practice, finally attaining to the Magga, Pala, and Nibbana. In short, people took up the robe to give up their sensual lust, or out of their own weariness of it. And they really practice for the sake of deliverance. In the present day, most people take up the robe as a mere ritual. So it turns out that they take up the robe just to accumulate the kilesas and sensual lust. This lust covers both material and inanimate things, as well as living people. For instance, money and riches, rank and honor, can all stir up the sensual lust within our hearts. For example, the various ranks in the religious hierarchy and their desire to be elevated to those ranks. Some people are driven to insanity out of their desire for these things. If a bhikkhu takes up the robe for these reasons, can one say that he takes up the robe to get rid of dukkha, rather than just accumulating kilesas and causing weariness amongst the people of the world? People can easily get tired of this kind of people because they take up the robe just to accumulate more lust. What is the use of doing this? It is of no use at all. Think about it. I am not fabricating anything or stretching your imagination, for this is the truth and accords with the natural principle. We can all see it. But if you take up the robe following the tradition and example of the Lord Buddha and the Savaka, then can the highest goal really escape from our mode of practice? Our way of practice is the most important thing. It is vital. So please take it to heart to get rid of the kilesas. Every kind of lust is the affair of the kilesas, and we must always reflect and perceive them as harmful to the heart. And we must be constantly correcting them and fighting them. The word pra in Thai means bhikkhu, and it means supreme or noble. Don't be noble just in name, like a person with a noble name, but who finds himself in jail. Let us be noble in quality. As a practitioner, one must not be heedless or complacent. In your conversations, don't be wild or immersed in the play or have your drink. Be observant of your heart. As far as having a drink is concerned, this is merely to keep your body or your dhatu khanda going. But as far as the conflict between the kilesas and dhamma is concerned, it must always be in a constant state of struggle. If you ever want to come across the most supreme and valuable treasure, the important things you have to watch out for are sankhara and sanya. As a practitioner of bhavana, you must get to know the tricks of these two khandhas, for they are the most significant khandhas. As far as the eye and visible form, the ear and sound, and so forth, is concerned, they are not as incessant as the sanya and sankhara that tend to get involved in the thoughts that arise from the kilesas, tanha and asava, all the time. They then entangle us. These two exhibit themselves constantly. Even when we are walking jhankama, they draw up images right in front of us. And these images are the images of the kilesas. Sanya takes up the past. It takes up the forms, sounds, smells, tastes, and tactile objects that we have experienced in the past, and then creates an aramana, a mental object that bothers the heart. This is due to the sanya and sankhara that concocts up various things inside the heart. Even while one is walking jhankama, one can be creating kilesas right there and then. This is because we are deceived by the khandhas, both day and night. As soon as we wake up in the morning, they begin to create the images of the kilesas again. But we do not know that they are the images of the kilesas. Whatever stories of things that sanya takes hold of, or whatever thing sankhara concocts, dukkha vetana will then appear, or restlessness, or agitation inside the heart, because these two khandhas round up all the poisons that enter the heart. So how can the citta not get out of hand when it receives all those poisons brought in by sanya and sankhara that constantly concoct up various things to deceive one? If you are observant, you will know. As a practitioner, how can you not know this? You will get to see it very clearly, both the sanya and sankhara, and how important they are. They constantly create the dhamma ramana, the dhamma objects, or mental objects, all the time. As a practitioner, you must be earnest and serious in your practice. Totally commit yourself. I would really like to listen to the results that arise from the practice of my fellow practitioners who have come to live with me and receive the instructions that I have given them to the utmost of my ability. I have not hidden anything or kept anything secret from you concerning the various aspects and levels of Dhamma. In every aspect of Dhamma, both arising from the practice and the results from it, I have revealed it openly to you, without hiding anything. What happened to this Dhamma that I have explained to you? Has it become void, without any result? This is why you cannot take it up and practice it, and attain to the result that I have explained to you. This is really something worth thinking about. The heart of the practitioner must be firm, strong, and resolute. Don't be weak and feeble-minded. This is not good, because it is contrary to the principle of Dhamma. Whatever it is, once it is weak, it is no good. When we are going against the way of Dhamma, however, we tend to be quite strong, but at the same time, we are very weak in the way of Dhamma. At the time when we are weak in the way of Dhamma, then we are usually strong in the way that is contrary to Dhamma. This is important. In the way of practice, concerning the heart, one must always be earnest and really committed to one's work. As far as samadhi and panya are concerned, you must not wait for the time. Whenever it is appropriate to use panya, you must use panya. Panya is for the purpose of correcting the kilesas within the heart. Samadhi is used for subduing or subjugating them and calming them down. They are about nothing else but the work of subduing or suppressing the kilesas. Panya is terribly important. You must see that while you are investigating in the way of panya, and it suddenly turns into sanya aramana, these being speculative thoughts and going out of the way of Dhamma, then you must turn around and go into the way of samadhi. Subdue and calm down the restless kilesa with the means of samatha. This means calm. What is your object of calm? The aramana of samatha. I have explained this before. Whichever Dhamma object suits your personality, this is the one that you must take to use as your object of calm. And you must master your heart and force it truly to remain with that particular Dhamma object. If you are concentrating on the in and out breathing, then you must be wholly concerned with the in and out breathing, as if the whole world is just not there. Don't let anything become involved with your concentration at that time. The heart tends to push out and go out to think about the various things in the world of samsara. The kilesas are the chief culprit here. That pushes sankhara to do the various thinking about this and that, and sanya to presume and assume about this and that thing. They are all concerned with the kilesas, in which we can never find any calm. They are worse than monkeys, and that is the way of the kilesas. That is why the heart behaves like a monkey. When we investigate in the way of panya, like at the Dhatukanda, for instance, differentiating and analyzing it, but you don't seem to get the result whether you investigate in the way of asupa or in the way of anicchang, dukkhang, and anatta, then this means that the kilesas have the upper hand. It means that the citta is hungry for the various aramana, and so you must immediately curb it by using the object or aramana of samatha. You must use samadhi to calm the citta. Be earnest. Really commit yourselves. Once the citta has gained calm, then you should begin to investigate using panya again. You must also force and control it, and then your investigation will become fruitful and will bear result. This means that you are really doing the work of panya. This is because the citta has filled itself with calm. You must observe yourself when you do the investigation. When you practice bhavana, you cannot avoid observing. You have to observe. You cannot wait for the technique handed down by your teacher alone. Without doing your own investigation or coming up with new ideas. Otherwise, you will not gain any wisdom. Any time when it is suitable to investigate, or any time when investigation is suitable for you, then you must investigate. You can investigate in the way of anicca, dukkha, and anatta, or you can investigate in the way of asupa, or any other way you like that accords with the truth and can cause weariness within yourselves. They are all the truth, but usually when the citta goes contrary to Dhamma, then it is not willing to accept this truth. What is our body like? Where does it arise from? You must dig into it and differentiate it to see its true nature. We say that it is I, or you, or they, or them, or that it is people or animal. Where does this body get its form? You must dig down into its original nature, which is the original element. Most of the nature of this body is the earth element. For instance, the hair of the head, the hair of the body, the nails, the teeth, the skin, the sinews, and the bones. We can see it clearly with our own physical eyes. They are of the earth element. Water, like saliva, for instance, is just the water element. The air is the air that we breathe in, and this is just the air element. The fire element is the fire or heat that digests our food, for instance. These are the four elements. But when the heart takes possession of this body, it then begins to mix up the various concepts about it. That it is I, or they, or people, or animals. That is I, that is mine. That is my eye, that is my arm, these legs are mine. The different parts that make up this body are all mine. And the heart can concoct up these ideas without having anybody to tell it to do so. It is the same way with the animals. They don't have to be told to concoct up these ideas. But this is very much a natural principle, part of the natural law. The kilesas are one aspect of the natural principle found within our heart. The kilesas do not need to be taught, because once they are the kilesas, that is enough. And these four elements that come together to be possessed by the citta and taken over by it, how long have they been so formed together? From the day of the birth of this body, for maybe 10, 20, 30, 40, 50, or 60 years. We are deceived by the trickery of the kilesas that tell us that this body is I, that tell us that this body is a human being, that this body is an animal, that it is you, or that it is me, from time long ago. Although this body is just the formation of the four elements, earth, water, air, and fire, following its original nature, which is the genuine truth. But we concoct up the various concepts about this body, so that we get deceived by the kilesas. How long have we been deceived by them? Let us think of when this body dissolves. Where does it go? Can we still call it a human being or an animal? The earth returns to earth. The water returns to water. The air returns to air. And the fire returns to fire. They all go back to their original element. Can we then call this thing a human being or an animal? Of course, we cannot. They are just the original elements, and truly so. But when they form the body, why do we then give them a different name? Although they are still just the original elements. You must investigate right into the basis of truth. And then this will become Panya. It is only the heart that can make this body move around. This body itself is just the genuine and true element. It is similar to a piece of earth. When this body dissolves, it just returns to the earth element. But we always call it I or mine, from the day of our birth to the present day. We have been lied to by the kilesas. Are we still going to be deceived by them? We will be deceived by them until the day of our death, if we cannot learn the true nature of it. If our panya cannot catch up with the kilesas, then we will always carry the burden of the concept of I and mine, and the concepts of animals and human beings, until the day of our death. Even if this body returns to its original elements, the upadana or attachment will never dissolve with it. It will always remain embedded within the citta. And with any new mode of birth that the citta takes hold of, it will still carry the burden of attachment by calling the various forms that it takes up I and mine. This will happen forever and ever, without ever coming to an end. With the investigation with Panya, this is how one should investigate. In order that one can see according to the truth, one must do this again and again, repeatedly. Investigate until you become truly impressed and truly see it within the citta. Then, as far as the attachment is concerned, one will not have to worry about it, because it will be let go of naturally when one has really seen the truth. Nobody can force or coerce the attachment to let go by itself. It is only Panya that can do this. When Panya has penetrated the truth, then the attachment will let go. Whichever part of the truth one has seen. Then that part will be free. That is why we are taught to investigate. Because once we have investigated and we come to understand truth, then we will let go of these things. Because all of them are faked, they are not the truth. We are going contrary to the truth, and we are constantly living with a false truth in all of our postures, standing, sitting, walking, and lying down, both day and night. We don't know this, and so we must investigate. Speaking about particula, or the filthiness of this body, it is full of excrement. This excrement comes out through the hair of the head, or comes out through the nails, or the teeth, or comes out through all the pores of the body. They are all over the body. There is nothing there that we can call pretty or beautiful. There is a very thin membrane of skin that wraps itself around the whole thing. Is it really impossible for Sati and Panya to penetrate this thin membrane of skin if we really want to use our Sati and Panya? What is the purpose of Sati Panya? It is really for digging out the truth, especially that of the five khandhas. You cannot make food out of Panya. Panya is only used for the investigation and analysis into the various parts of the body that the king of falsehood has taken hold of. When you have seen it clearly, then the upadana will be let go of. This upadana is much heavier than a whole solid mountain. When you have investigated clearly, then you will gradually let go of your attachment, and then the citta will begin to spring forth. It will begin to elevate itself, until it finally arrives at the state of freedom. This is what we call the purified citta. Be earnest. Really commit yourself in your practice. You have to have standards and bases in your practice. Don't be lackadaisical. Don't speculate or imagine about other places that can be of more benefit to you than the place of the Sacca Dhamma. This is the chief principle. Wherever you are, you have to take up this principle. Take this as your battleground. This is where the Gilesas are found. You must get to see it very clearly. The Lord Buddha taught Dhamma without leaving any doubts or questions. His Dhamma, the Sovākkhāta Dhamma, was well taught in every respect. This Dhamma is Niyānika, that is, it is capable of leading the practitioner gradually up away from dukkha, eventually attaining to the highest state of freedom from dukkha, without any doubts. So how can we have any doubts? The Gilesas do not have a teacher. So how is it that they can become our teacher? The Lord Buddha tried so hard to teach us the Dhamma. How then can the Dhamma have no power over the Gilesas? In our circle of practice, we must be able to conquer over the kilesas. The kilesas have no teacher or ajariya, but we do have a teacher, an ajariya, who has taught us very well. What then is the reason for us not being able to combat with the kilesas, which have not been to school at all? We have constantly and always been on the losing side. This is no good. It is very natural that in the beginning we have to really struggle. This is because the kilesas have been on the powerful side for so long. It has been dominating our hearts for a long time. So when we want to subject them and subdue them, then we must use our all-out effort to do so, sometimes even putting our lives at stake. When it is the time to give up our lives, then it is the time to sacrifice, because we are going after the real essence. Let's get to see the result within our hearts. Let the light shine forth within our hearts. When we come to perceive the truth, and this is what is meant by seeing truly and realizing the truth, when we have really seen the truth that really impresses our hearts, then we cannot help but utter, "Is this really so? Now I know this truth about this and about that. Now I know the truth of the dukkha found within the khandhas. Now I know about samudaya, the attachment. They cannot escape from panya. Be serious and earnest. The acharyas and teachers that can really teach Dhamma are very hard to find nowadays. There are many practicing bhikkhus, but those who have discovered or come across the real essence from their practical experience are very few indeed. And what is the reason? The reason is material things that trample all over them. It is nothing else. These material things are the chief culprit. They can really destroy people. The more material things become developed or progressive, then the more will the heart deteriorate and degenerate. Whether it is in the way of the world or in the way of Dhamma, that is the way it is nowadays. It may be just a piece of paper that people have conventionally set up and call money, but it is enough to scorch the heart of a bhikkhu. Although in truth, we know that it is just a piece of paper. If you use it to roll a cigarette, it doesn't taste good at all. But we are deluded by it. As far as the fake and counterfeit things are concerned, the citta can grab at them very quickly, because the citta itself is full of fake and false things. So when two false things come together, it is very easy for them to join hands, because in the citta there is no truth. But when one has practiced and developed the citta, and establish truth within the citta, stage by stage, then whatever truth that it knows, it will take hold of, and it will throw away the false things. It is this one and the same citta, but now they differ from each other. In the beginning, it is very hard. But although it is hard, you have to endure it. We have shouldered the burden of dukkha for kalpas and kalpas in the past. And even this life, the dukkha has already been quite severe. When the citta constantly builds up troubles and worries, how can one avoid being involved with dukkha? These khandhas are the instrument or tool of the kilesas, and that is why the kilesas can constantly exhibit themselves. And as soon as they exhibit themselves, they simultaneously create dukkha. So how can one then not shoulder the burden of dukkha? If we cannot see the bane and the harm of these things, how then can we find the virtue and worth of Dhamma? I have instructed you to the utmost of my ability. I really want you to understand and practice. I don't want to see empty wind without any substance. When walking Jangama, there is just empty wind. And when sitting in Samadhi, there is just sleepiness. Then no result can come forth from these postures of exertion. So what are we going to do? Today this is the way it is. Tomorrow we take up the same old habit. And so we only come up with the same old habitual results. Nothing new to come up and surprise the heart. One then becomes steadily discouraged. The teaching that the teachers have given you will then turn into something without any meaning. This is because the kilesas have the victory. They make no exception for any class of people. They dominate the heart and subjugate it under their influence. We therefore have to suffer dukkha and hardship because of the kilesas. We have taken up the robe so that we can overcome and correct the poison of the kilesas with our diligent effort and strenuous exertion. Why can we do it? When we have eliminated some of the kilesas, we will come to see the value and efficacy of our diligent effort. When the citta has calmed down with the means of bhavana, while before it was in a state of restlessness and agitation, we will come to see the worth of this practice. We will then move upwards. If we take satipanya and use it, then satipanya will arise. If we develop it, then it will become apparent. When we begin to investigate and probe into the dhatu khanda and the other khandas, then slowly the truth will arise. And then we will learn the lesson of Dhamma. And this will keep on arising as we keep on doing the investigation. This is the panya that will arise due to our investigation and examination. We will eventually come across this panya. In the beginning stages, this is what we have to do to develop panya. When we have seen the worth and results of panya, then we will become energetic and keep up the investigation with this panya until it becomes the automatic panya. As the kilesas steadily diminish, then our diligent effort will become intensified until we are fully possessed with diligent effort. We will always be ready to go into battle, and this is the only thing that we will be looking for, just to keep on struggling, just to fight and fight. All the laziness disappears, because it is the affair of the kilesas. The more the kilesas diminish, the more intensified will be our satta and diligent effort. The more the kilesas disappear, the more will Dhamma appear, until all the kilesas are totally eliminated. We will then perceive that all the dukkha that used to consume our hearts has all disappeared. The citta then becomes totally empty, without having anything to come in and disturb or destroy it, like it used to be in the past. This is because one has totally relinquished and let go with panya. When panya has clearly seen the truth by investigation, then it will let go of everything. Then the citta becomes empty. The citta is now devoid and empty of the kilesas, tanha and asava, that were the poison for the heart in the past. This emptiness then becomes holy Dhamma. All that is left behind is the khandhas that still go on, just like the lizard's tail that wriggles and wriggles after it has been cut off the body of the lizard. These khandhas still continue on until they finally dissolve. They have no meaning in themselves. They themselves don't know their own meaning. For instance, rupa, or form, or body, doesn't know that it is rupa, form, or body. The vetana in the khanda doesn't know that it is vetana. And similarly with sanya, sankhara, and vijnana. They concoct and conceive of things, but as soon as they have done that, they disappear. They just do this and then disappear. Sanya, when it begins to imagine or draw up pictures, will then disappear. Vijnana, the awareness of these things, will acknowledge and then also disappear. Because avichara, the chief culprit, is no longer there inside the heart to push them around. The khandhas then become the instrument of Dhamma. Before, it used to be the instrument of the kilesas. But once the Dhamma of emptiness has appeared in the heart, then one just depends on one's khandhas to do benefit for the world. Like the Lord Buddha, who dispensed the teaching, and the Savakas, who gave it to the people. As they are still intact, these khandhas have all turned into the instrument of Dhamma, because the kilesas have died. They are now just the instrument of Dhamma. When the khandhas can no longer go on, they then dissolve and disappear, following the law of anicchang, dukkhang, and anatta. For they are samuti. and they have to follow the law of samuti. The khandhas are samuti, and so are anicchang, dukkhang, and anatta. They must go their natural way. The one who has attained to purity doesn't have any problems. He is the one who is free from worry. Nibbanang paramang sukhang. Nibbana is the supreme happiness. Where do you find it? Once the kilesas have disappeared from the heart, that is enough. What else are we going to seek for? We have to experience dukkha because of the kilesas. But once the kilesas have disappeared, where are we going to find any dukkha? And where are we going to look for nibbana? If one is still deluded, one will have to seek for it. But once one knows, one doesn't look for it anymore. Nibbanam paramam sukham, eternity, forever and ever. The Lord said that Nibbana is permanent. When the citta has attained to full contentment and has let go of all samuti, whoever says anything about anything, it will not pose any problem for that particular citta, because that citta is totally devoid of any problems. What problems can there be? Whether one is living or whether one dies, it is no problem. For this just follow the natural law. This citta does not fall within the realm of problems, like the world of problems does. End of Detsana.